Blog Talk Radio.
Well, 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 I get a second of a series of conversations with Renee Jaworski. Renee, hello, Renee.
Hello, Dennis, how are you?
I am wonderful today, and wonderful, one of the reasons why I'm wonderful is by continuing communication and collaboration and growing relationship with you. You're such a creative, and we're going to explore the nature of creativity, because one of the things that I have learned over the course of my 71 plus years and is that creativity is a, and we may have discussed this before, but we'll discuss it again, is an internal permission for ourselves to open up to all that's there. It's like, you know, like Jung talked about the creative unconsciousness, and we get access to it. It's like it's a permission that we give. And when I'm around you, and when I connect with you, whether it's on WhatsApp or whether it's on Facebook or whether or not it's over the air, and we have not physically met, I give myself tremendous permission to be myself. And suddenly all that creativity comes out. It's an extraordinary experience, Renee. It's just, what a gift.
It is a gift, and that's why I want to keep going in this direction with you, because there's something about synergy, and you don't always get that chemistry with everybody. So when you get
right.
It, you have to hold it, you have to explore it, and you have to cherish it, and you have to go on that adventure boldly with each other. But you both have to be invested. You both have to be involved
totally.
To really make sense. So that's what's so great about this.
It feels like, you know, like when it must have felt like we don't have tapes. And I know that this sounds grandiose, but if I am grandiose, if nothing else, when Lennon and McCartney sat down on Paul's bed and just sat there and were just playing, when they were first just getting and working and riffing together, we don't have a record of that. But when Jaworski and Tardan are doing this, we're having a record of it. We're having a record of whatever it is that we're going to create or whatever. We're building it. We're letting the world in on the beginnings of when we're doing it. Because I'm telling you, Renee, I want to go for it. And I want to go for it with you. Your creative spirit is so strong. There is so much of your brilliance. And I want to know about that. I mean, did you know this as a child? Were you creative in your, like, who was Renee as this 5 to 10 year old prepubescent being?
You know what, Dennis, I have an answer for you. It was a lot of phone calls from the school to my mother. And I'll give you a really beautiful story that other people, if people are raising children, creative minds, or people who have been creative minds and who maybe felt like they didn't fit in. Let me give you an example. I'm 5 years old. I'm in kindergarten. I'm in the classroom, and they tell us to create a drawing of our classroom, and everybody draws their own point of view. I still remember this. I did it from if I were on the ceiling looking down, so I had like the top of everyone's head was like a circle, and then I had like the rectangles for the table. And that's a phone call to my mother, who's a psychologist, and she gets the phone call. There's something wrong. You know, your daughter gave us this. You know, what is that? And then the same teacher about, you know, 3 months later, well, we just wanted the kids to draw something, and here's what, you know, Renee drew. And it was supposed to be a funny drawing. My idea of a funny drawing was I had two people looking at each other on opposite ends of the page, and there's two speech bubbles, and it's in a mirror. So one might say, hi, how are you? Well, the one on the opposite side says the same thing, but it's in a mirror image, so all of the letters are backwards. So that's the joke. But it's a phone call to my mom, because it's like there's something wrong with your kid. She's there's something wrong. So that's what it's like to be a creative child, is a lot of phone calls from the school.
How did mom respond? And how did you, as a child, take that information?
I took it that I was wrong, and my mom, as a psychologist, totally just blew it off because she knew that it was just creativity. So she knew that, but I wanted to fit in. So to me, that was a failure. You see what I mean?
Oh,
so you,
good
when you created,
God, yeah.
Feeling,
what do you mean,
failure?
See what I mean, mirror image? Yes.
I mean,
are you kidding me, Renee? That is exact. Oh, man, thank you. That's exactly how I would.
Right. Right. And millions of people are having this experience. And what happens to the children who don't bounce back? They go into lines of work or into social situations,
yep,
that they don't authentically want to be in, but they've been told. I mean, how many people have I met who are in regular 9-to-5 day jobs? Not that there's anything wrong with that, but they tell me, I wanted to be a dancer. I wanted to be an artist. My dad took the art supplies away. My dad threw the guitar in the trash because he said it won't make money. And so it's a constant feeling of failure, but that's why you get, you know, Jerry Seinfeld, he said that when people come up to him on the street, they say, I want to be a comic. Let me do a bit for you or whatever, you know, and they do something for him and they say, was it good? And he'll say, no, it wasn't good. And he said, the reason I tell them that is if they really want to be a comic, they're going to come back from that. But if all it takes to dissuade you is Jerry Seinfeld telling you you suck, then you didn't have it anyway. It doesn't matter. It's resilience. It's resilience. I went to a talk by Salman Rushdie, you know, the great writer, and somebody, students stood up at the end of the talk and said, oh, Salman Rushdie, what can you tell a young, inspiring writer? And Salman Rushdie said, I'll tell you, don't write unless you absolutely have to, because we have enough books. So honestly, if you can do anything else, just go do it. We don't need you. And But that's beautiful. To me, there's a beauty in that. It sounds so negative, but it's not negative. It just means that you have to plow through. Artists have to be bold, and they have to go through that feeling of failure and being different. And at some point, if you rise out of that and say, you know what, I am different, but I don't fucking care if I'm different. In fact, it's cool that I'm different. That's the artist. There you go.
I so agree, and I want to be at that opposite end. How do we take? Because one of the things I do is in my communication coaching that I work is that the brand of communication, that there is a group of people who, when you give feedback to them or they take feedback, if you say to them, you can't do this, they sit there and go, just let me prove you wrong. And then it doubles in. And to the other aspect, it wilts them like a flower. Dennis, basically. That's where Dennis is. So I respond to creative nurturance. How do we creatively nurture on those early stages so that we know? I mean, it's like, here's an example I use, Renee, is that when a toddler stands up and just takes the first couple of steps across the room and then falls on her butt, most parents will sit there and go, well, I'm going to withhold any praise until you just walk up straight all the way across the room. You know, instead they go, oh, good, good, now stand up, try again, do the thing, you know, that kind of praising the effort rather than the result, the mindset place, you know, Carol Dweck did all that work on. It's the mindset. So how do we get to the mindset to find a way that each person creatively responds? Because you and I both know, as professionals, because we're pros and we're both professionals and we're going to continue to be professionals, we have to be resilient to the criticism, and we have to know that within a broad range of people who see our work, there's going to be a range who love it. There's going to be a mid-range who just think, oh, okay, and then there's going to be a range who absolutely hated. I mean, the exact same piece.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm reading a book right now called Art and Fear. And people should go look it up because I'm reading it for the second time in my life. But they talk about how most art you're going to create is going to suck. It's going to be
right.
Stupid. It's not going to – and that – but the whole point of it is that you just have to keep creating. And it has nothing to do with the receptance, how other people receive it. Nothing to do with that. The other thing I wanted to – so
right.
What we have to do as artists is artists create. I know a lot of people that identify as artists, but you say, what have you done? And you realize, like, they're not doing anything. And you say, well, no, you have to at some point put something on the paper. You have to at some point, you know, draw
Thank
something
you.
Or whatever. So it doesn't all have to be good. Let me tell you, when you do get to the Alan Alda, because I've recommended the Alan Alda memoirs, he wrote at least two that I know of. He said something in there that is so brilliant, you know, and he comes from like a vaudeville background and stuff. And he said, let me tell people who are not artists, when you go to a performance, when you go to an art gallery, when you go to anything that an artist is showing to you, a concert, always, always thank them and compliment them afterwards, because that is the most vulnerable moment of their lives. And you hold their heart in your hands. And I see a lot of people not doing that. We have to go up to people and we have to nurture them, and we have to find authentically. If you go to a performance and 99% of it is really, really derivative and it's banal and insipid and all of that, you find the one thing that resonated with you from that hour and a half, and you go up there and you shake their hand and you thank them, and you do it from your heart because you hold their life in your hands. This is everything to an artist.
Oh, I love that. You know, that's appreciative engagement. Is because we can find something that helps them to build on it, because you never know when. Look at a cathedral. It relies on those foundational stones. That wasn't just finished up. They relies on that foundation the first time when it's just put in there, when someone is willing to give the effort.
Right, right. And another thing I did want to add, too, is just when we were talking about how just keep doing art, you know, eventually something will click. There's a singer-songwriter from Athens, Georgia. He's deceased now, but his name is Vic Chestnut. A lot of people will know him, Vic Chestnut.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he's a very unique artist, and he's very prolific. In his lifetime, he made tons of records. And they asked him, how do you stay so prolific? How do you write these songs, Vic? And he said, you know, I was raised by my grandma, and my grandma, when I was a little kid, she would sing about making tea in the kettle, and she would sing about walking across the room, and I realized that art was imbued and entwined in your everyday life. So I never got hung up on, every song I write, you know, every song I write has to be a hit. No, wait a minute. No, it doesn't, because then nothing gets written. It's too much pressure. So he would say, no, I'm going to write 20 songs today about reading a book, about looking at the fireplace. And that's how he became so prolific. And some of the songs were terrible, but then you had the shining gemstones that, you know, then the world appreciated him for. So you have to just keep, you have to keep creating, even when it's bad. You have to just work through it. And collaboration, like what you and I are getting, this iron sharpening iron, that whole idea is so much, because when you offer something that doesn't go the way you want it to, you need someone to come in and say, okay, we're going to get through it. And, you know, let's salvage this little iota of it that actually wasn't terrible, and then laugh about it. And build that resilience that, hey, artists suck like all the time. In fact, go back and listen to, oh my gosh, there's so many. John Lennon, when he was doing Imagine, the record, he brought in his, I forget if it's the producer or what, Beatles fans are going to be screaming at their computers right now, but he wrote, he had two, I don't know these things, but he had two sides of the record, and he gave it to, you know, these people know when he burped, you know, that kind of thing. I don't know that. But he came, and someone came to visit him. He's out there in England and everything. And he said, I'm working on this new record, man. He's like, and he showed him the A side. And it was, I forget the name of the song, but it's like this political rally cry. And it's a great song, but it's not like a hit. And the guy listened to it, and he said, you know what, John, that's okay, but like, what's on the B side? He flipped it, and it was Imagine. And that you know, and the guy said, why didn't you show this to me first? And John said, oh, really? That's what we're going to move forward with? Imagine? Oh, you know, you need somebody, even if you're John Lennon, you need somebody to sit there and be like, no, John, this is the fucking thing right here. I don't,
yep.
You know.
That's it.
You need someone who's outside of it.
Exactly. And that has been one of the gifts of, and this is the amazing thing. I mean, we've known each other barely a couple of weeks. And it was so cool because I've heard of session musicians. Melissa and I are watching the country music, the Ken Burns. We're both Ken Burns fans. And
yeah.
And the beautiful watching the country music, watching that neither one of us are country music fans in general, all of Patsy Cline and Hank Williams and a number of others do resonate. But in general, I'm not. But we talk about the creative process and the just this entire arc of how do we continue to be creative? How do we continue to be able to do that and to produce and to go through it?
You have to create your own environs that make sense to you in that moment. And I'll give you an example. The Mamas and the Papas, Michelle Phillips, she lives down the street from Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, and she visits them from time to time. One day, she walks over it, and Brian's wife opens the door, and sand spills out everywhere. And Michelle Phillips says, what the hell is going on in your house? There's sand over all your carpets and everything. And the wife says quietly to Michelle, I know it's crazy, but he's writing some of the best songs. Do you know what he was writing? He was writing Pet Sounds, which was the seminal, I mean, just boom, what he needed to achieve that.
Jesus.
And by the way, he wrote two memoirs too. Brian Wilson wrote two memoirs that both will knock your socks off. That's another one for your cue. But he said in his memoirs, he was like, he just needed to feel like he was at the beach, and he knew it was crazy, but he just kept having them bring in the sand because it worked for him. And without the sand, do we get Pet Sounds? Maybe. Maybe not in the incarnation we have it now. So if you need to put sand in your house, do it. If you need to walk in the woods at 4 a.m, do it. What I would say is experiment with it. A lot of people say they don't need exterior inspiration, but those people who do need exterior inspiration, don't be ashamed of that. Just keep trying different permutations and eventually something will work. And even if it's ridiculous, let the world laugh at you. Who cares? I mean, who cares? You're an artist anyway.
Well,
I mean, Elton John walks out looking like a peacock half the time and people love him for it. So be different. Embrace that. You know, embrace the weird.
Yeah. How do you do that?
Well, I'm one of the people that I have the interior inspiration. So in other words, I don't need inspiration. That's just something that happens to me. So like if I sit in front of a piano, I'm immediately inspired. But I will say that one thing that works, and that's great, you know, but that doesn't mean I don't get writer's block. I obviously do. But for me, I have to see something. I have to play around and noodle around until something works. If I see a blank sheet of paper or if I don't hear any music, it's really hard for me to get started. So I get the ball rolling and then I manipulate. It's the difference between having clay in your hands and building something from nothing as opposed to a sculptor who has a block and you chisel.
Yeah.
I'm one of the guys who likes to have the sculptor feel where you're chiseling and polishing. So then you see the progress. But then also definitely having people like me collaborating with you or me talking to other artists. I talk to other artists like all day long and they give me inspiration too, you know.
Oh, God, yes. And that's where, as an extrovert, I find that I very much stimulate. I prefer doubles to singles. I prefer bridge to chess. I'm a collaborator. That's why I want to be in the right. I love being in the writer's room. That's one of the incredible things about you, is that I just feel this creative synergy to be able to, you know, this is where I lost my train of thought when I was talking about country western, country music and all that. That wasn't where I was going. Where I was going was, this is what getting a chance to know you is, because when I sat down with you the first time that we talked, and it was like when I read in the Nesmith autobiography that he reads that you told me. I mean, the first time when and I've read this in other places, of Springsteen or what, when you sit down with someone, when he heard Clarence, when Springsteen heard Clarence and he sat down for the first time, he went, yes, that's somebody I can play with.
Yeah,
that's what I felt with you instantly. It was like, wow, this is somebody I can play with. I can jam with. I can create and do that. It was like instantaneous. It was like this amazing feeling to go, hell yes. And you were so generous in saying, yeah, let's explore this. Let's do that. I mean, I will thank you forever for the open-heartedness that you had to be willing to explore this, because I have so much. I have a large body of work that needs collation, that needs work, and you have a large body of work that you're working on now. Not only are you working on your music, but you're working on your Peter Tork bio, plus you're working on your work in Africa, the work that you have done with On Death Row, and all the evolution of the artist of Renee Jaworski that is evolving, that I get to help with. Plus the work that we create together. So all those things are happening at the convergent point when you and I met. Those things converged, and then we said, yes.
Right, and I want to explore why we both said yes, because I am a born collaborator, and I'm extroverted, 48% of the time, but I don't always get that sort of free fall.
No.
I'll jump out of a plane for you. If you tell me, Renee, we're jumping out of this plane right now, I'm not going to ask for the parachute. I'll just assume you know what you're talking about, and I'm just going to jump because I have that trust.
God, that is so cool. but that to me though, Renee, is when that creative magic happens. When Simon and Garfunkel hit that harmony. Or Phil and Don hit that harmony, you know, or Michelle and and Mama Cass hit. Was it Michelle?
Yeah.
When you hit that harmony and you go, this is special. This is something.
And harmony.
This is something that two people can. I know I'm talking over you. The two people, when they find that harmony, and to me, it's not to say that one is better, one artistic group is better than another. It's just that it's something that is unique, can only happen at that, with those two people and how they harmonize.
Thank you. That's what I've been trying to. And let me make this clear, because I always get asked about this all the time from the first podcast we collaborated on. Dennis and I never did not know each other before that first podcast at all. I mean, a couple emails, but
nope.
We did not know each other. We have been
And we did it deliberately that way. We did it. We deliberately decided not to do to meet each other on the air.
Yes. Of course, which is great, because now we have this log, right, of what happened. But this is an example to people out there. So if somebody's listening to this and they feel like they have not found the right people, the right collaborators, and they're giving up hope. And I know a lot of artists spend a lot of time in isolation because they feel the world does not get them. They feel ostracized. What I will say to those people is, do not – I'm going to borrow a thing from Peter Tork here, but – do not give up just before the miracle. Dennis is my miracle. So if I had given up before that point,
so is Renee.
If I have, thank you. So you can't give up before, you know, Dennis walks into your life. And Dennis is 71 years old. So we are not giving up. right? So no matter your age.
And you're 38. And you're 38. Yeah. That's where we are on the timeline within, and where we're going. Continue.
Right. And so it's important for people, because people keep thinking that you and I had known each other previously. We did not. We fell into this, and it is a miracle. And what I would say to people who are isolating themselves, because a lot of artists give up, and they say, you know, especially when you hit your 30s, everyone starts asking you, you know, where's the 9-to-5? Where's the paycheck? You know what I mean? And it's like, you're a failure. And then you remember the kindergarten call home, and you say, I'm a failure, you know, whatever. Oh, I'm projecting now, but okay. So, but don't give up. Don't give it. Your dentist is out there. You can't have my dentist. You cannot have my dentist,
no.
But you can have your own dentist. It's not like I'm not that generous. I'm not giving this one. There's another dentist.
That's wonderful, and that is it. And if we keep finding it, and we find it, because even introverts need nurturance and substance. And one of the things I listened to Brené Brown and her one of her latest pieces, and she really talks about the SFD, the shitty first draft, the being willing. Because she keeps going back to that being willing to have that shitty first draft and work with it give permission to be able to get there. And so as you and I get a chance to get to know each other, and we get a chance to explore the creative of what we have, and be able to show each other the early work that we're doing, and how do we nurture that and grow that and learn how to do that. And that's what I want to explore in the series of podcasts that we're going to be doing, is to be able to explore that, because I want to go, and I'm front loading this, but I want to sit down and to know where you are on a creative piece. Like, take me through. I'd love to take me through the process of what was your entire creative process up until today, when today will be in the future, of course, of Peter Tork. Where you're going,
right.
How you're doing it, how do you keep your rhythms and the momentum going on a project that large in the same time that you keep the rest of the work that you're doing, which is so broad-banded, and how you're doing. So I'm teasing that for a show very soon, to be able to dig into that as a subject so that we'll actually be able to see a project like that. And you, who know so many of my projects already and the things, I would love for you to do the same for me about either Reasonably Spontaneous Conversation or some of the other work we're doing on how we can develop and keep that going. Because if we can explore the creative process in real time, actually...
Oh, my gosh. Dennis, people out there, some of them do realize, a lot of them do realize, but if anyone does not realize who this man is, this man made Mel Blanc stop drinking water to answer his question, because that's how great his questions are. And if anyone wants to go Google that, or Dennis provide a link, I don't know. But yes, he interviewed people like Mel Blanc.
Absolutely.
And made them crazy. Oh, amazing.
Yeah, thank you. And it's so funny because this is a good example of that, because if you'll go down, if you'll scroll down on the comments, the first few on the YouTube page, you scroll, the first few comments are great interview, oh, some wonderful insights, and suddenly you'll get into, God, what an awful interviewer, oh my God, and then suddenly they get into, oh, what a douchebag, he cut him off at 100, this isn't what I wanted to see, all this sort of stuff, and I'm sitting there answering, I'm going, okay, I'm going to stop reading Google comments right now, and so you'll get it, same interview, and yet you'll get the entire spectrum of experiences across that, because everybody will experience it differently.
I know. And at different times of your own life. I mean, I've watched the same interview with you and Peter Tork and Mel Blanc, and I had different reactions as time goes on. People need to just stick with it. And that's why as an artist, you need to never, ever just take the criticism too seriously, because even that one person who hates you right now, down the line, they might end up being one of your biggest fans. You just
and I changed. Boy, we're gonna put a pin on it, because we're running at the end of this episode. Renee, what a gorgeous light, amazing light you are in my life and in the world. We are getting ready to schedule our next episode. Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Bye, Renee.
Bye.